March is Women's History Month, and today we're talking about some of our founding mothers, those women who were instrumental in the American Revolution. Their contributions gave us some of the freedoms we now enjoy, so we're celebrating some strong, courageous, patriotic women in our nation's history. That's next. Welcome to the Moms for America podcast. Each week, special guests tackle the issues facing the moms of America today. Discussions include personal stories and advice on how moms can build a strong foundation of faith, family, and freedom in their homes and country. Hey, moms, I'm Debbie Carletis, your host, and welcome. Welcome once again to the Moms for America podcast. So glad you're here again. Always right here at the top of the show, I want to remind everyone, please like, subscribe, and share the podcast. Also, in the beginning, I do this special invitation and I say, are you a part of Moms for America? Well, if you are, super, because you're one of our mamas. And if you haven't joined the movement yet, it is so simple. You go to momsforamerica.us, sign up for the newsletter, and join the movement. Moms for America, we are moms all across the country, uniting for faith, family, freedom, and the Constitution. And by the way, we are the fastest growing women's group in the country. So please join us. We're here to support you in your journey through motherhood. Also, if you have an idea or a topic for a podcast, I would love to hear from you. podcast@momsforamerica.net. We so do appreciate your input and always love to know what you'd like to hear about. All righty, on to today's program. One of our favorite guests joins me today. You'll recognize him. It's Rick Green. Rick Green is the founder of the Torch of Freedom Foundation and Patriot Academy. He is passionate about helping Americans understand our nation's godly history. He's joining us today to talk about the ladies. Well, big news, Rick Green is in the house and back on the Moms for America podcast. Welcome, Rick.
Always good to be with you. Anytime you want, I'll be there. So,
well, some people might be saying, why are we having Rick Green on to talk about Women's History Month? Well, that's because you are one of the greatest historians and you're passionate about our history. And, you know, really quickly, too, I know that you're a dad of four kids, grandpa of four, yeah, right?
Best job on the planet, by the way. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So America's future is so important to you. And you do this all across the country, talking about history and the importance it is for us as moms to teach that and keep that relevant in today's culture. So thanks for joining us again.
You bet. Absolutely. Glad to do it and a great time to do it. And a good reminder that we all have a role to play. And just as they did in the founding era, but certainly today, it's going to take all of us to save this thing.
Yeah. Let's talk before we get into Women's History Month and some of our great mamas and women leaders of that that time. The importance of history. I think this is something that is just continually being attacked in our culture. It's being rewritten. Just a nice reminder to our moms about teaching our kids true history, real historical history.
Yeah, you know, Debbie, you've heard me say it. I mean, if every problem we're facing is the outgrowth of the petri dish where bad government grows, and that's called civic ignorance, biblical ignorance, not knowing truth, we fall for the lie. And by not knowing our history, first of all, we don't know who we are. We're kind of lost. It's like a person with amnesia. That's the way Mike Huckabee describes it. You're running, walking around, stumbling around in the dark. Yeah. And Ronald Reagan said, if we forget what we did, we won't know who we are. And that's kind of where we are right now. We've forgotten what we did. We don't know the heroes of yesterday. We don't know the history. And so because of that, we don't know who we are. And then we fall for the lie and they tell us, oh, America's evil and racist and awful. Right. And I'm going, wait a minute, why is everybody trying to come here? If we're so bad, man, why shouldn't they be digging tunnels to get out of here instead of to get in here? So, yeah, I think it's vital that we rediscover our history, all of it, right? The good, the bad, the ugly. We should teach the bad. There's awful things in our history, just like every other nation. Right. But when you compare, relatively to every other nation, it's the greatest nation in the history of the world. So despite the bad, still the greatest nation in history and so much good. And it's been a blessing to the world. And so we need to know those stories for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about the women during the American Revolution, what were they like? I want to get into some specific stories, but what were they? Were they women of faith? Were they, were they strong? Were they timid? Were they uneducated? Were they educated? What were they in general? What were women like during this time?
Yeah, definitely more educated than what we would think today. Yeah. More educated than we are today, men or women. And you had the original mama bears, were people like Abigail Adams, who was an equal to John Adams, and he considered essentially the most important intelligence officer that he had throughout the Revolutionary War. She would get him the intel on what was going on in terms of troop movements and all kinds of things. You look at how she educated John Quincy Adams and raised him to be one of the greatest patriots and statesmen this nation or the world has ever known. So she wasn't alone. There were so many others like her, and not only in terms of just education and you know, being aware of what was going on in the world, but a willingness to sacrifice. And whether that meant, as we often have to do, whether it's your loved one going off to war and being gone for 6 months or a year, or your loved one is serving in office, and that cuts both ways now, whether you're the husband or wife serving in office, the other one's got to sacrifice and take care of more stuff while the other one's gone. So it was that same kind of, I guess the best way to sum it up, Debbie, would be that both men and women at that time had a sense of duty, and they were willing and understood that without that sense of duty, that culture didn't work and that society wouldn't work. We seem to have lost that, both men and women today. I think it's coming back. I think thanks to Moms for America, Patriot Academy, all the organizations that you and I both work with, we're seeing that sense of duty. In fact, people get involved right now because they're going, man, I need to do something. It's falling apart. What can I do? Well, duty is what you're feeling in your gut when you have that desire.
Yeah. And I think too, those moms, those women understood if that America was not free, the future, you know, would just be hopeless. So I guess a lot of them were looking at America the same way that we are now, and that we have to be engaged, like you're saying, a sense of duty. So they were very engaged.
Yeah. And I think, you know, of course we always are talking about, you know, gender roles and all that stuff today. Right. And it is definitely different today than it was back then. But I think what we kind of have lost is that in their mind, there wasn't an inequality. It was a team effort. Whatever your role was in the family and the home might have been a little bit different. But, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but you had a lot of early colonies and states that allowed women to vote, actually supported that because it was a family unit that was voting. And so I think that's probably the most important thing I would want to remind people of, is that they had a sense of team and family. Mm-hmm. Whatever the role, you know, specific things that you provided or did, they didn't see each other as you're better than me or more important than me. It was, we're in this together. I feel like we've lost that, and that needs to be restored, regardless of whether it's the husband that's serving in the legislature or the wife that's serving in the legislature. It's that team mentality that I hope we can get back that they had. And in fact, one of my favorite stories is a young girl who had that mentality because her dad could not go muster the men. She stepped up and did it, and she was 16 years old, but she knew the area. And so when the British were attacking their town, this was actually in 77, not 76, when Paul Revere did his midnight ride. But the dad, Colonel Luddington, Sybil Luddington, steps up and says, he's like, man, there's no one to go, you know, ride and muster. This is the middle of the night. She's like, Dad, I know the area. She was very good at riding. And so she convinced her dad, she's like, let me go. So she actually ends up not only being a midnight rider, mustering the men, but she ends up doing better than Paul Revere. She actually rides three times as far as Paul Revere. She doesn't get caught. She rides in the middle of the night. She's 16 years old. It's raining. It's storming. She's riding in rough areas. She has to fight off a mugger in the middle of the midnight ride. Her dad is hated by the British, hated by the outlaws. He's basically the chief law enforcement officer in that part of Connecticut. So, I mean, it was that kind of, she just kind of saw the family as a team and said, I'm going to step up and do this. And I know for my daughter, when we found that story, she was just like, she was so stoked because she was 15.
Like, yes.
She's like, my hero. If she can do it, I can do it. Exactly. And when that happened, I was like, this is why the stories are so important. Because when you find somebody that looks or feels at all like yourself and they do something like that, you go, wow, I could do that too. So I love bringing those stories back and making sure we know them.
What was her name?
Sybil Luddington. She was 16. And here's the really cool thing. She went on to be like a great grandmother before she died. She had a huge family. She was still just as feisty through her whole life. You read the stuff that she wrote and said, and you just go, that's a lady I would, a lion, man. She's a lioness. She's somebody I would want to lock shields with in battle. And there's this great statue of her in Carmel, New York, where she ended up finishing out her life. And in the statue, she's just got this look on her face, and she's got the stick she fought the mugger off with. It's just so cool. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we should be telling everybody. And I'll do a shameless plug. My daughter actually rewrote her story. We have a book called Legends of Liberty, and she's one of the 15 voices or 15 legends in there. And so my daughter wrote it like a novel, but it still kind of it tells the story of Sybil in just a few pages. And we actually did. We actually stood there at the statue because this is more than you want to know. But the way we found her.
I love this, though. I love this. You know, women love all this. We love all the details.
Well, you'll especially like this part. My son, who my youngest son, basically smart in a smart aleck way. He was like 12 years old. We're sitting around the fire. And my daughter brings up Sybil. She's like, I heard, that there was this great midnight rider that was even better than Paul Revere. And my son says something to the effect of, well, there's a reason Paul Revere is well known. He must have been the best. And that other guy you're talking about obviously wasn't as good. So when he said that other guy you're talking about, that my daughter immediately had to point out, no, it was actually a girl, by the way. This was when they were like 14 and 12. You know, this was really fun. Right. And so we decided it would be a challenge. And we literally go to Boston and go investigate. My 12-year-old son goes and investigates Paul Revere, and my daughter, I take her over to Carmel, New York, and we investigate Sybil Ludington. And when it's all said and done, that's when we found out three times as far as Paul Revere, didn't get caught like Paul Revere. Paul Revere had a beautiful, perfect weather night in the Boston streets, and had it easy compared to Sybil Ludington. So we found out the girl, my daughter really enjoyed the fact that the girl was the much better midnight rider than the guy.
Yeah, she had one up on him.
That's right.
So these women were courageous, whether they were 16, whether they were moms in their 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever it was, they were also championing. They were also engaged. They were either supporting their husbands, watching the home. I know that some of them actually even fought. That probably wasn't as normal. But let's talk about some of those heroic leaders, the women that I guess all the women were heroes at that time because it was very difficult. But what are some of the other ones you like to just chat about?
Well, there's some that where they actually stepped up and fought for, their husband either got killed in battle and they were there with their husband at the battle. And so they stepped up and took over a cannon like Ludwig and others. But then there was also, I like this one because you talk about courage. We often talk about the signers and how they, when they pledged their lives, fortune, sacred honor, they knew that was a death warrant. They knew that that could potentially happen to them, but it did actually happen to them. So for instance, Francis Lewis, when they came to his home, he wasn't there. His wife was, and Elizabeth Lewis, when she told him he's not here, they said, well, we're going to burn your home, we're going to destroy your home. She would not leave the porch of her home. She literally stands on the front porch of her home and says, "You're not taking my home." Kind of the way we would all think we would want to defend, and most of your mama bears would say, "I would defend that way." Well, they fire a cannonball at Elizabeth. It misses her and lands right by her and goes into the house, and her family's screaming at her to get off the porch. She literally says to them, "They're not likely to hit that close again." And she wouldn't move. And so the British finally gave up and themselves went up and dragged her off the porch. But they ended up putting her in prison. And Debbie, she ends up, it was kind of one of these deals where we don't realize how evil some of these people were back then. I mean, they essentially starved her to death. I mean, she didn't die in prison, but she died a little bit after that because she was so mistreated, so bad so that people from town would sneak up and literally try to sneak bread through the keyhole and stuff like that. It was bad. And she was so abused, she did end up dying as a result of the abuse she took there. I think it was four of the signers' wives that didn't make it through the Revolutionary War. You know, there were a bunch of them that didn't make it, about nine of them that didn't survive. They watched their money be destroyed. They watched their ships be swept away. I mean, they really did, and woman. They did give everything so that we could be free. And we're not asked to do that much. I mean, our sacrifices today are pretty slim compared to what they went through. And so whether it was a wife that was, knowing her husband would likely be killed by the British because he was signing, or a wife like Elizabeth Lewis that was willing herself to die because her husband signed the Declaration of Independence, or watching their sons go off to war and die. Right. I mean, there was so much of it that required just a sense
sacrifice.
Of duty. Sacrifice and duty. Absolutely.
And I know that's what you just mentioned earlier, is these are some of the things that we've lost. But, I guess none of us really want to sacrifice or give, but that's really that's what we have to do for freedom. That's what we have to do for our family, for our country, and for our kids, is sacrifice. And moms and dads do that regularly. Let's talk about... go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, no, I was just going to say one other... I keep thinking about the word courage when you say courage. There was this other young girl named Dicey Langston. She was 15.
Dicey?
And, Dicey. Yeah, Dicey. Yeah, things are getting dicey. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know
Her name
Dicey.
Was literally Dicey. I don't know where it came. I don't know how she got it, but... But she was like Sybil. She did kind of the same thing. But she actually swam a frozen, literally, she nearly froze to death in order to warn her brother. And then she, who the British were coming after, and he was a soldier. And then she ends up facing off with these Tories and facing them down with a gun and all the, and ends up, the cool part is that one of the guys that was, they were basically the Liberty Men was what they called them, not the Sons of Liberty, but the Liberty Men in that area. And the main dude was so impressed with her that he ended up marrying her. So that one can kind of
She got
like
a husband out of that.
Yeah,
that's
she got
good.
A husband out of the deal as well. So it was like, it's kind of like the what was the my favorite movie is The Patriot and the kid that Heath Ledger plays in the movie. Jeez. The son of the Swamp Fox. You know how he meets his gal while he's out there fighting, and they end up getting married in the movie and secretly and all that. I like those stories too, because we forget this thing went on for like 7 years, so life had to go on too. So you're not just fighting the war. The war's in your backyard. It's in your town. It's in your community. So there were weddings and babies born, and I mean life was going on. So can you imagine being a mom in the Revolution? Your husband's off fighting. Maybe you are pregnant. You end up having a baby. You're still trying to take care of the other kids. Stuff going on in town has to be taken care of. Maybe you got the farm and everything else that you're also having to run because the husband's off. I mean, we got it easy today is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. They were amazing what they did. And they did it for that long. They birthed a nation. It's why our nation is strong today. Even after a generation or two of being weak, we still have the remnants of that strength because they were so incredible in the Revolution. And those stories, man, we need to be telling everybody we can about them.
They do. It does seem like it was pretty frightful at that time. You know, you just worry about everything. You don't call the police. You don't call 911 when there's a problem. I think those mamas just had to deal with it.
That's right. That's right. And they could defend themselves too. They could shoot as well.
Yeah, so, but they were packing. They had, that's right?
That's right.
They had their guns at the door because that's really what the culture demanded.
Yeah.
Yeah, another story for me before we go into Abigail. Anyone else you want to?
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I cut you off while ago.
No, it's okay. I love all these stories.
I got excited.
I know. So I'm saying if you have any other ones, just jump in here. But I know we talk about Abigail Adams, Remember the Ladies, her impact, her influence.
That's right.
You referred
to
her.
Tell John Adams that, yeah.
Tell us just a little bit about her, how courageous she was and how she really, she was on the forefront for women. Clearly.
Yeah, from the very beginning, even in the idea phase, as you just referred to, when she told Adams when he's going to the Continental Congress, to don't forget the women. And then, you know, you look at, I wish I had a picture of it. Maybe you can find it. But the statue of Abigail and John Quincy that used to be downtown in Quincy, I don't know if it's still there or not. But it was just a way of reminding people, look, this, you know, we always say the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. It still does. But for them, it was, I mean, they were literally creating a world, right? I mean, if you think about it, you're molded, just as you think as a mom and a dad both should, but specifically the moms, that you're molding the mind of that child, that you're molding that child into being a godly man or woman, to being a good contributing member of society. Mm-hmm. They were doing that and molding society itself. I mean, they're literally creating a nation and designing this thing to be a place where they would have the freedom to raise their children and all of those things. So you're both having to mold your children and mold a nation. I mean, that's a pretty big deal. And Abigail Adams was right there in the thick of it from the beginning. And I can't imagine, I mean, not only are you a hero, but you're also, you have to receive the derision of the community when John Adams goes and defends the British soldiers after the Boston Massacre, for instance. So, you know, he's hated for that in many ways because he's saying, no, everybody deserves a fair trial. Well, imagine if you're Abigail Adams and you're defending your husband from those kind of attacks. So it's just all the things that we deal with today, trying to get ourselves to think about how they had to deal with it as well. But in spades, man. And I mean, in terms of like all of it at once, not just on one front or dealing with one attack. When you're in a Revolutionary War type situation and you're trying to raise your family and you're trying to create this new thing, we think we have to stress, you know, they didn't have the drugs. They didn't have the respite. They didn't get the vacations. It was nonstop all the time. And they had the grit to get through it. And that's why, Debbie, that's why we say tough times creates tough people, you know, and then that creates good times. But then the good times makes us soft. And then in those soft, because of those good times, we become soft. That's what leads to tough times. We can't be soft. The reason Moms for America is so gritty, that's and right. because you're, you know, like when we were at the conference the other day in Dallas, I'm walking around and when I'm talking to people, I'm going, these are tough ladies. These are people that are not afraid to take a stand. So that courage of an Abigail Adams has been passed down. And right now is the time to stand up and channel that courage so that we can end these tough times before they get truly tough. We can interrupt that if we're willing to stand and we're willing to do the things it takes and not be the lazy, soft, typical byproduct of good times. We have to short circuit that and say, I know times are good, but I'm still going to do my duty. I'm still going to step up. I'm not only going to raise children that will defend freedom. I'm going to defend it myself.
Right. And the fact that moms are raising the next generation is so important in our homes. What about today's advice to the women of today? I mean, we're talking about Women's History Month and some of our heroes, but the important role of women in today's culture, you know,
make history, you know, it's Women's History Month, but go make history, make history right now. This is as important an inflection moment in history as the revolutionary period. In fact, I think we're sitting in about a 1773, 1774 moment. And so
explain that real quick. 1773, 1774 for us.
Past the Boston Massacre. Everybody knows the tensions are incredibly high. We know something's got to give at some point. The First Continental Congress happens in late 74, September of 74, and it's that first time that the delegates from the 13 colonies are really thinking about, okay, how are we going to handle this? And in fact, they prayed. That's where they had the 3-hour prayer, and Reverend Juche comes in, and George Washington and Patrick Henry don't even leave their knees. I mean, it was a serious moment because they knew something's got to give. The pressure right now, it's at a boiling point.
Right.
And I think everybody feels that in America right now.
Sure do.
My prayer is that we don't end up with a Lexington, shots fired, right? And it's actually a physical, kinetic war. My prayer is that instead we're able to take that 1774 energy and prayer and sense of duty and reform our government before it has to go to a split. Before we lose the nation, we have an opportunity to do what, in fact, Jefferson says in the Declaration, that when any government becomes destructive of these ends, the ends of truth, the fact that our freedom comes from our Creator, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, all those things, that when any government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. We don't want to abolish this government. We want to alter it back to the limited government that our founding mothers and fathers gave us. And so right now in that 1774 kind of mentality, I'm urging everybody to get more involved. Become an Elizabeth Powell. I mean, there's another one that we don't talk about. She was the first Constitution coach in America. She was the one that was inviting Benjamin Franklin and these others over to her parlor and literally talking about the, you know, what would it look like if we had our own Constitution? What are the freedoms that we should be preserving and protecting? And so they would have these discussions there in what we would call the living room, and talk about what needed to be done. And we actually think that's where the famous conversation happened, where Ben Franklin is asked. Everybody thinks it was at the steps of Independence Hall. There are some writings that say, no, this happened in her parlor. But she's the one that's credited with asking Ben Franklin, what kind of government have you given us, right at the end of the Constitutional Convention?
There's that lady asking the hardcore questions, like, what's the end goal here?
Yeah, just like at the school board meetings and everywhere else. What are you doing to our country? Yes, she said to Ben Franklin, what kind of government have you given us? And he said, a republic. If you can keep it. Well, she was doing the work even before the Constitution was done. And I just think that's the opportunity before us. I say to every mom out there, invite your friends and family over to your living room and have those discussions. And I know you're doing that in Moms for America already, but just like with Patriot Academy, there's probably a lot of members of Moms for America. They dial in, they watch, they listen, they haven't done it yet. I'm talking to the ones that haven't done it yet. get her done. It's time for Larry the Cable Guy to come on here and say, get her done. We're running out of time. So if you're not one of the moms that has actually started, you know, the groups at, in the home, I just blanked on what y'all call it whenever you have the
cottage meetings.
Thank you. The cottage meetings. If you haven't done your cottage meeting yet, you don't have time to wait. You've got to step up and be Elizabeth Powell for your neighborhood, for your community. We need you desperately to take action. Don't just watch Debbie talk about this stuff. Right. Go do it. Don't just listen to Kimberly and watch the conferences or even just go to the conferences. You got to do it in your home, in your community. Now is the time.
Yeah, absolutely. The cottage meeting, teaching the principles of liberty in their home, and then bringing that to their community, because we have to be renewing that every day in our homes and throughout America. So how do we be, I mean, you just touched on this, but how do we in today's day lean on these women? How do we share this? How do we be a part of the revolution? And I mean that in a really good way. You're talking about the cottage meetings, but women are so influential. I mean, that's why they're after our vote so much, right? I mean, we decide what our children wear, what we teach, how we cultivate their hearts. We decide what we spend our money on in the home. I mean, women are really a part of the revolution, just like they were then, they are now. So I think sometimes we don't realize how powerful we are. And I mean that very respectfully, not that men aren't, but moms have just that really, there's a niche because they are involved in so many aspects of the home.
And every one of those areas that you just mentioned are battlegrounds right now. Yeah. Everything that you just mentioned, how the family spends the money, what subscriptions does the family have? Are you supporting Disney still, even though they're out there, you know, trying to literally steal the heart and soul of your child and destroy the country? You know, so how the family's spending money, absolutely a place of influence, and you can start redirecting those dollars to companies that support liberty. And, you know, that's a whole nother topic, but that's an easy one to start making a difference in. Absolutely. What your kids wearing, what they're learning, you know, directing the upbringing and the education of that child, raising them to be a patriot and be able to withstand, teaching them courage, telling them these stories, just like some of the ones we shared today, so that they can learn and be inspired by that courage. Literally in the town square, creating an environment where you're either at the library. Hey, what about replacing Drag Queen Story Hour with one of the brave book readings or a Constitution class or whatever it might be? Moms are absolutely at the epicenter of this and can be the ones to turn it around. And frankly, in cultures where they really started drifting and going crazy, it was when they started going after the kids and the mom said no more. That's when it changes. And that's what's happening. I mean, you know it. Mm-hmm. You're doing it every day. Yeah. That's why we're starting to win in so many areas, because the moms have gotten involved. And so, yeah, I mean, all of those areas that you're talking about, and I guess that's kind of the way I wanted to end that part, is to say we've got to do the Winston Churchill thing at this point. When he said in World War II, and he gave that famous speech, he said, we'll fight them on the beaches, we'll fight them in the air, we'll fight them on the land. Mm. Basically, we got to think about the fact that every area of our life is a battleground, and we've got to engage in every one of those. So that requires us being educated. So plugging into the podcast, paying attention to what's going on, taking these classes, using the cottage. I mean, there's no excuse. You've got everything at your fingertips right now. Monster America is giving you everything you need. You just got to get involved and not be intimidated. Don't think you got to be an expert on everything. I am ignorant about so many things, even in history, right? Like, I consider myself kind of tip of the spear, America's Constitution coach. There's parts of the Constitution I'm clueless on. There's tons of places in our history that I have total gaps in. And our coaches, when we tell them to host a class, when we tell the moms to host a class, we say, you don't have to know any of that. You just have to hit play. That's all you got to do. Get them in the room, play the video, or open the book and read together, and be humble enough to say, I'm just a fellow sojourner. I'm going to get stumped by questions. I'm not going to know the answers. That's okay. We're in this together. It's kind of like grabbing the musket off the mantle and marching off to war. Even if you're not the perfectly trained soldier, I'd rather have sloppy success than perfect nothing. And that's the attitude that we've got to take right now.
Right. Whether it's 1776 or 2024.
That's right. Amen.
I mean, not easy. And I don't know. I don't know if I would be that strong back then. I guess you would be, because everybody rises to the occasion usually, especially if you're defending your home and your kids and your country. After the Revolutionary War was won, it wasn't a piece of cake there either for those women. A couple of comments about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about even just the basic constitutional framework and mm-hmm. the way that this whole thing was going to work. Each state was still trying to figure out what this is going to look like. Obviously, you had the, you know, the fight for women's suffrage that would come literally 100 years right. later. So, yeah, no. Well, 140 years later, there is no end to this. Honestly, Debbie, it's like, you know, when they achieved independence, even I think it was John Adams, actually, that said the most important win was in the hearts and souls of the people of America. That desire mm-hmm. for liberty was what had to be brought out of people. So I would say, even as hard as it was in the Revolution, it's a little bit easier afterwards, but clearly had to stay in the fight and keep their courage and their duty. You're not done till you're 6 feet under. And we aren't done fighting for liberty until we're 6 feet under. And they realized that too. So they never stopped. I was trying to remember, there was a I was thinking about even the timing of the Declaration and the fact that we're 2 years, 100 roughly days around that, 102 days, 3 days, whatever it is when this airs, from the 250th birthday. So how do we honor those people 250 years ago that birthed the Declaration of Independence, the women and men that did all the things that we just got through talking about? I think we do it by exactly what Abraham Lincoln said. He said, this was Gettysburg. He said, from these honored dead, we take an increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. So the cause that Elizabeth Lewis died for, the cause that Sybil Ludington and Dicey Langston and all these others were willing to die for and fought for, is American exceptionalism. It's the principles of the Declaration. So we're about to celebrate the principles of the Declaration in 2 years. What are we going to do between now and then to make sure that we haven't lost the whole country, but instead we've revived the principles of the Declaration? Yeah. That's really, every time you get on Moms for America's website, every time you watch the podcast, every time you have a cottage meeting, every time you do any of these things, you're having an increased devotion to the cause and you're reviving the principles. And I think if we do enough of that, we will have a big old party in 2 years. And we will say, you know what, look at the difference in the nation. We were dying as a nation. We were falling apart as a nation. Most people didn't know. Look at the increased civic knowledge that we have and how much better our Congress is doing, how much better our local state legislatures are doing, how many school boards we've taken over. I say we need to have a celebration in 2 years and look back at all the work that Moms for America has done. And I know Kimberly and I talked about this once. I don't know if you and I ever talked about this. We were almost started at the exact same time. I think Moms for America was 2004, and we were 2003 was the first time that we did a Patriot Academy Leadership Congress.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's almost like God was preparing our two organizations for 20 years, laying the groundwork, getting us ready, getting the right people in place for this moment in time. This is it. This is what we've been prepared for.
Yeah, I remember the first time I met you. I don't know if you remember that, but we were at a meeting and I said, I'm Debbie from Moms for America. Moms for America, I want to meet Kimberly Fletcher. I want to be involved with you guys because we're like...
We were in Florida, right?
We're brothers and sisters of this battle.
Right.
And then
that
started this great relationship, and we had promoted Patriot Academy and Biblical Citizenship and all of those great resources all over our website. So we appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for being such a strong voice. And, you know, thanks for joining us, because we all need reminders. And one thing I love about you is you're so positive. You know, I get off and I go, hey, we're going to make it. I just talk with my brain.
We can do this.
We can do this. Right. Yes. And so thanks to all of our founding mothers that, you know, really did stand strong alongside their husbands and really did deep down inside of them, they had to really reach for courage, and they did.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Now it's our turn. We need to model them. We got to know their stories. So share these stories, folks. Make sure that you're teaching your kids these stories. It will inspire them to be patriots if they learn about enough of the patriots.
Right. Well, thank you. We appreciate you.
Always good to see you.
All right. Thank you. Love having that Rick Green on the podcast. He's so inspiring. Love that. So also, if you want to check out Rick's organization, again, it's Patriot Academy. Go to patriotacademy.com. You there can find so much information about history, about our founding fathers and our founding mothers. So go ahead, check it out, and continue teaching your children the history of America. When I talk about that, I also do want to remind you, Rick talked about it in the interview, the cottage meetings. Those are available on our website. It's our signature program. It's 12 lessons that will inspire and educate you about America's amazing heritage. You'll hear about Abigail Adams and all of those incredible women as you go through the cottage meeting. So check that out at momsforamerica.us. And again, sign up for the newsletter when you visit there. We have so much incredible information for you as moms, from webinars to seminars. It's a mouthful there. But we have everything that you need in your journey through motherhood. So please check us out. Alrighty, moms, I say this every week, liberty. Liberty begins at home. And that's why moms are so important, because they teach those principles of liberty in their home. They bring them to their community. You are the heartbeat of America, and you are the heartbeat of your home. So moms, stay encouraged, stay in the fight, and let's celebrate Women's History Month by being true warriors. Alrighty, I will see you next week, and let's keep changing our world one home at a time. Thank you.